You are listening to the Curtis King Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curtis King Podcast. For those of you that are listening via Spotify, regardless of where you're listening from, make sure that you subscribe, let a friend know, definitely leave us a rating. I would suggest a 5-star, but that's just me being full of myself. Ray, how's this camera looking? My face like it's going in and out of focus. We good? All right, is it good? Okay, just want to make sure. For our YouTube watchers out there who had to endure some craziness last week, you know, video going, I'm just playing. I'm going to leave Ray alone. Ray has too much power over these videos for me to be critiquing anything. But we had a few little errors. It's all good. We human. Human beings, human music producers out there. Let's start off with a couple of words from this book called Stillness is a Key. I've talked about it before, by Ryan Holiday. We're going to speak about a few different topics. I'm looking up at the board now, the things that I want to cover. But I thought this was a great place to start at because I see a lot of you guys that, guys and ladies, that leave comments. You resonate with the inspiration in these podcasts. And I know that a lot of you, based upon how you're commenting on it, are going through some tough stretches. I don't know what that is specifically. I mean, that's part of the human experience in itself. So I always try to make sure that I start off with something that just kind of injects you with just that I'm gonna be all right type of energy. And so Ryan Holiday, who is one of my favorite authors, actually has a few different things that I want to share within this particular book, Stillness is the Key. The first one, there was a philosopher named Epicurus who said, "Nothing is enough for the man to whom enough is too little." Think about that for a second. Have you ever held, so this is Ryan Holiday, have you ever held a gold medal or a Grammy or a Super Bowl ring? Have you ever seen a bank balance nudging up into the seven figures? Maybe you have. Maybe you possess these things yourself. If you do, then you know. They are nice, but they change nothing. They are just pieces of metal, dirty paper in your pocket, or plaques on a wall. They are not made of anything strong or malleable enough to plug even the tiniest hole in a person's soul. Nor do they extend the length of one's life even 1 minute. On the contrary, they may shorten it. They can also take the joy out of the thing we used to love to do. And if you've been following this podcast, you know that the last 6 months I've been going through that same exact thing, in which music was the thing I was falling out of love with. Not, I guess to a certain degree, even not enjoying listening to music, even though that sounds crazy, because literally every part of my life, every part of my day includes music somehow, some way, including this morning. I went to the gym this morning before we jumped in here and started doing some content. And on the way to the gym, it dawned on me that I left my headphones plugged up in the kitchen and I was already halfway between the gym and home. Now, a normal human being would say, well, I guess we just don't have any headphones. I, on the other hand, think that you have to be a complete psychopath to go in the gym, or you want to fight, or you want to kill somebody if you go to the gym without music. That means you don't need no music to pump through your ears for you to go in there and run at 9.0 on the treadmill. And you should go get that checked out. I'm just playing. For those out here who work out, I probably shouldn't be talking about nobody that work out on a regular basis. Anyways, I went back home. I made a U-turn. I flipped back and I went back home because of how important music is to my life. But aside from that, the bigger topic at hand and why I chose this to talk about that is because I think that there are producers out there that look at the shiny things that this industry brings. They look at the things that they think most producers want to aspire to get. And if you have been living life long enough, you know that things are not as good as what they appear when you're fantasizing about them in the beginning. Right. You may see something out there and you're like, man, I want that. And then you actually, maybe it's a pair of sneakers. Maybe you've been working crazy shifts to get this rare pair of Jordans or whatever you're into. And then you got them and you wore them and you realize that, albeit they may be a little bit more comfortable, maybe they're not. It's just about that initial satisfaction of completion of that goal. And then you get it, you wear them, and then starts to kind of like lose its value. You know how they say that a car depreciates in value when it leaves the lot? It's almost like those shoes depreciate in nostalgic value, in pursuit value, as soon as you put them on your feet. Because now it's no longer about the journey. It's about, I got it, and now I just have another pair of shoes, shoes that cost me a lot of money to get to. And so I think there's a lot of producers that look at their major goals and they use things, or they expect that these things at the end of this journey are going to give them the ultimate happiness, the ultimate fulfillment. And there should be more than enough stories out there or examples of producers who have reached that. And you could just tell by the way they act that that wasn't enough. And so for those of you that you think you need a Grammy, or you think that you need, I'm not saying do not aspire to do those things. I want you to get everything that you want out of this world. I just don't want you to put happiness off and delay it and postpone it in the name of, I will not be happy until I get this. Although it may seem like a cool ass Nike commercial, like I'm in pursuit and nothing else matters in life until I get to this destination. Sounds cool in 30 seconds, but in reality, it does not play out that way. And I'm not talking in absolutes. I'm trying my best not to talk in absolutes. I'm just talking in facts, is that the way that we fantasize about things, the way that we make things bigger in our minds and put them on a pedestal, there's no way that it can reach that, because in our minds, we customize every single element of it, from the way that it looks, the way that it will feel, the moment that it will happen, the second, the hour that it has to happen in order for it to be perfect, the way that somebody tells you the good news. There's so many different elements in which we are not in control of, and it's almost impossible for all of these elements to play at the same exact time in pure perfection to that fantasy we had initially when we were starting to pursue the thing that we're going after. And so I just say that because I feel like the people who find success in their life, in their careers, in music, in their production, are the ones that don't get too high on the highs or too low on the lows. And so that was a very important piece that I wanted to share with you. Today, what I want to start off with is the topic of fear. What are you afraid of? Please take a second and leave a comment in the YouTube if you're watching this on YouTube. But if you're not on YouTube and you're just listening to this in your car, I want you to really, really take a second to think about what it is that you're afraid of. What do you fear? Because I think a lot of people, you know, if you're anywhere in the A-type personality, I don't fear nothing. I ain't scared of nothing. Nothing scares me. You know what I'm saying? I punch a bear in the nuts. I don't care. Right? I know there's those folks out there, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those who are willing to be vulnerable enough to think to themselves, what is it that you fear? Because likely what it is that you fear is at the source of whatever pain or obstacles that you are enduring. When you think about beat block, is beat block really you having the inability to put an idea down? Or is it that possibly the ideas that you're putting are just not good enough? Go a little deeper. Good enough for what or for whom? Something to think about. Are these ideas that you are now trying to formulate not up to par with your past beats or what people associate with you? I was on a live stream on my Instagram, which I try to go at least once a week live, and I'm making a beat in there. I'm off my CBD. Shout out to Oliver's Harvest. I'm feeling good. I'm easing in the process. I'm talking to the people in there. It's really chill. And then you always got that one person. And if you don't know who that one person is, I hate to break it to you, it's you. It's that one person that comes into the live stream. Everybody's having too much of a good time, vibing out, right? Letting a beat sort of play out, letting a producer find their way through the beat, because it is a journey for them as well. And there's that one person that comes out of nowhere and like, yo, Curtis, man, this ain't your best beat, bro. I feel like you could do so much better. Well, hello, you. We meet again. You were gone too long. I thought something was wrong. Here is this one person, and that one person showed up in a live stream, and the old me would have internalized that critique and would have took that and said, man, maybe I'm not up to par. And I would have took that to the next beat that I made and realized, oh my God, this beat is not up to par either. Oh my God, this beat is nowhere close to, man. I go back into my old archives, my Apple Music playlist, and I'll be like, man, these beats were so much better. The Lemonhead beat, the Funny Money, oh my God, they were so much better. But the part that I would forget about and sort of ignore is the fact that those beats were made not as a byproduct of me sitting there and saying, I'm going to do my best. I am not going to settle for less because somebody out there is like, you could do better, Curtis. I don't need your motivation, first and foremost. I got myself. I got me, damn it. It didn't happen because those moments that we have, that those beats where we're like, I got to listen to this on loop for 4 hours because I don't care if anybody understands or wants to listen with me. Those beats are the byproduct of you sitting your ass down in front of your laptop, computer, keyboard, and already making so much music that it leaves room, it leaves time, it leaves space. It's almost leaving a crack in a window for the magic to come find you because you're in the place where the magic happens. Not trying to manually facilitate magic, not trying to be David freaking Copperfield and sit up here and try to, ooh, look at this beat. Ha 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 ha. 808 slides for years. You thought I couldn't do it and I did it. That's not what you do when you're creating your best work. A lot of times, and maybe you can relate to this, has your best work not come when you didn't know what the hell you were doing or you didn't know what you were going to make, but you were so open and so energetic and your energy was so high in such a positive place that you got to cooking. It didn't matter. It didn't matter that 808 didn't hit the way that you feel like it should hit. It didn't matter that this other producer made this style of beat and you feel like you should compete with that. None of that mattered because in the moment, it's your moment. And the only thing that matters is the moment. And so what I have learned, and the reason I brought up fear, because we kind of went on a little bit of different route, but the reason I brought up fear and the way I'm going to bring it all home is that a lot of us are so fearful of the initial hit that we get when we're in fear that we don't use it as Mike Tyson's famed trainer said, and I got to pull up a name because I'm not exactly sure, and don't butcher me if you're a big boxing fan, but I forget. Mike, let's look it up. Mike Tyson trainer. Let's look it up right now. Let's look that up right now while we're on here. And cuss. Yes, yes. Constantine D'Amato. D'Amato. Yes, yes. D'Amato. The legend. Please forgive me for not having that name. But I was on Instagram in my Explore page. And, you know, thankfully, because of the kind of accounts I follow, I don't get a whole lot of the ratchet shit. I finally get nothing but inspiration. Don't be looking at me like that, Ray. I don't get a whole lot of that ratchetness. Thankfully, now I'm surrounded by motivational quotes, business advice. And then every once in a while, I think it was an account called the Hip Hop Motivator that posted this. And it was a 8-minute video in which first Mike Tyson spoke about a concept in his very early years when he was that guy, right? And they were asking him, do you ever get scared when you're going into these fights? And keep in mind, Mike Tyson was the most feared heavyweight boxer in the freaking world at that point in time, right? He looked like he didn't take no bull, and he didn't. He was ready to fight everything except for some pigeons, because you know Mike Tyson had love for the pigeons. But that man was a beast. And so what Cuss told him is that it's okay to be fearful. Fear is not the problem. How you react to fear is the bigger problem. He said, Mike Tyson said, his trainer told him, Cuss told him, fear is like a fire, right? If you continue to add gasoline and you continue to panic and you continue to react in a negative manner towards the fear, it can burn you up, kill you and everything around you. Okay, The flip side of it is if you can control the fear, re-alter the fear, redirect the fear is what I meant to say, in the direction of what you actually want to accomplish, fear can be your greatest ally. And so it started off with the Mike Tyson clip. Then it went to Cus, who he talked in detail about his own philosophy. And what I resonated the most with it was that he said straight up, if we didn't have fear, because people want to get rid of fear. A lot of producers are fearful of what people are going to think of their music. A lot of producers are fearful of what happens if I send these beats to this email and this rapper clowns me on his live stream. There's a lot of specific things that we're fearful of. What if I don't make it? What if I'm dedicating all my time to this and I end up just being a local producer? A lot of things we're just fearful of. Some things, there are logical fears. Some things are just kind of out there. But he said, we need fear as human beings. Think about it. If we had no fear and we wanted to get from, say we're in a high rise, we want to get from level 18, you know, level 18 on the high rise to the street, and we want to get there faster than an elevator, and we had no fear, we'd jump off the top of the building. That's the fastest way. I'm flying. That's the fastest way. Instead of waiting for the elevator, we need fear. Fear keeps us alive, right? The fear that a woman has when she's walking through the parking lot and she can smell the pheromones off of somebody who doesn't mean well. That's a real thing. You can smell the pheromones off of, I believe it's off of males specifically, that have just that energy that's just like they're going to do some harm. They're able to sense that and smell the pheromones, right? And they ignite the same fight or flight or the same energy that fuels fear. So we need fear. Fear helps us if we choose to view it that way. But if we look at fear as being an enemy of ours, what's going to happen is that it's going to burn our hands up and everybody around us. That fear can turn into, I'll give a specific example. So for the producer that fears getting feedback on their own music, they may take that fear and turn it into judgment of other music producers' music. They may take that fear and instead of control it and use it to fuel more music, it will actually be an excuse for them to be inactive and then become judgmental of every single other producer who is active. And I know if you've been in the producer community long enough, you've seen that. It's those accounts that have 15 beat videos, got a few tight beat videos, got a few laptop screen videos, all averaging about 8 to 15 views. Nobody's leaving comments, right? And they're doing all the stuff that they heard from Gary Vee and from the folks that they get advice from about make it engageable, leave a question in the caption. They're doing all of that, and they just feel like none of it works. They're not moving the needle. So what happens when the person that practices becomes the pessimist? They start to redirect their fear, hello, that nobody cares about what they're doing, their fear that it's all for nothing, and they use their fear to burn other things down, right? Who has time to burn other buildings down when you're busy building up your own building? It's a question I ask every single day. Because there's times where I have my human moments and I see somebody that feel like they fake in the funk, or I feel like somebody who is using their influence for bad. I see it a lot. I know last week somebody was like, you need to start naming specifics and naming names. I'm not giving you every single name of everybody that ever did it. It ain't going to be beneficial to nobody. Y'all just want some smoke. Y'all want some smoke. That's what you want. But the smoke ain't going to help nobody except for you. For you. Because you're going to be like, yeah, now we got some. And then what's going to happen? You're going to lay your head down and I'm going to be on Twitter arguing with somebody. Thank you for adding that to my life. I appreciate you. So I speak about these things because it's not just one person who's doing this. There's a lot of folks who do that. And I see it and you want to say something, but then you got to ask yourself, how do you even have the audacity to want to even speak on somebody else when you got something you're supposed to be building up? What the hell are you doing, Curtis? And so I stopped myself. And now it's to the point where it's not even like that deep of a conversation. I just catch myself when I see it. When I feel a feeling, I observe it, but I don't do anything about it. I just leave it alone. Let it pass like a cloud, and I keep going on what I'm doing. Because when you're building up what you got going on, you'd be surprised how many people that you want to collaborate with, how many people that you want to get on the radar of, how many people you want to acknowledge your existence will then care when you're so busy working on your own empire. That is not a mistake. That is not by chance. That is by design. When you are detached from things, those things are therefore attracted to you. Because everything in your energy says, I'm pressing forward regardless if I get this person's attention, regardless if I get this thing. And so what happens when you become magnetizing, you become a magnet to the things that you used to want. So use your fear as an ally. Find ways to use that to fuel more music. Don't let it make you one of these bitter ass producers out here. Don't let it do that. And I feel like the majority of the community that is in here is not like that. And I'm thankful to be surrounded by so many quality individuals. But we all human. And we all get in places where, you know, we may have a jealousy moment. We may think that somebody blessing means that we're not doing enough. Somebody's, congratulatory moment makes you feel like, damn, but what am I doing with my career? That's a very human thing to feel. What makes it, I guess, I wouldn't even say inhumane, but what makes it a problem or problematic is when you then redirect that energy to go burn other people's shit down because you don't like the house you're in. That's problematic. And you're not going to grow from that. So that's the first thing. Something else I wanted to talk about briefly before we get to the next major topic is I've been noticing a lot within for years now. I think a lot of you have noticed this too. People have a very warped point of view of what support is. There's a lot of folks who feel like I've been supporting you for this amount of years, Curtis, or they maybe feel like they supported you for a certain amount of years and they feel like they're entitled to things because of their support. They feel like some people feel like they're entitled to now your support, or they feel like they're entitled to you having an opinion that they can always agree with. But I think they forget that we are all human beings with our own viewpoints and our own lenses to look out from. And so support should not be attached to an ultimatum. What am I talking about specifically? Yo, fam, hey, can you listen to my music? No response. Hey, bro, come on, man. Like, I've been supporting you, bro. I've been liking all your posts. The least you can do is listen to my music. No response. Hey, Curtis King, you a bitch. No response. Bro, for real? You just gonna ignore me the whole time and not listen to my music? Support, fam. Do you know what support is? That's not support. That's not support. Support doesn't have to be negotiated. You ain't got to negotiate. I've been a Laker fan my whole damn life. Could you imagine, Ray, if I jumped on Twitter after being a Laker fan all my life? I'm 35 years old. Can you imagine if I jumped on Twitter and I was like, yo, at Lakers, if y'all don't acknowledge my fandom and my support, if y'all don't acknowledge how much of a diehard I am and give me some season tickets or just show me some support for supporting y'all, I'm not going to be a Laker fan no more. Of the millions of Laker fans that are around the world, they would not even wink, blink, an eye at that. Like, get your goofy ass out of our mentions then. They probably block me. Okay, diehard. I don't need them to acknowledge I even exist as a human being for me to be a fan of what I'm a fan of. I support what I love. And I think they would much rather have the support of people who are like, yo, I'm riding with you regardless of what you do for me. Y'all already did it for me. I got a team I can ride with. Support is no different when it comes to music. So I posed a question on Twitter. Could you imagine having a fan base full of the results of your spamming or the results of your follow for follow or the results of your support for support? Could you imagine the quality of people that you would have following you who are all there because of you saying, I'll support you if you support me. You've got to think there's no longevity in that. You got to think that when it comes time to pay, why do they need the pay? They don't pay you for it. I don't know you like that, and I don't actually like it. Imagine if McDonald's was like, yo, we'll pay the first customer willing to eat our new cheeseburger $10 if they eat it. Okay, free burger. Eat the burger. And then you go off to Burger King, and they're like, yo, fam, nah. You supposed to hold me down. Why are you not buying stuff from us? What? The logic is all off. I know my analogies can be off too, but the it's all off. So stop trying to build a fan base where you're more concerned about numbers over people. These are people, man. And people are entitled to like what the hell they want to like. If they don't like your music, guess what? 7 billion, 8 billion people on the world. How many of those billions, do you know how much billions is? Billions. How many of those billions do you think have even people who have shitty taste in music? How many of those do you think have really bad taste in music? So even if you don't think your beats are that good, I'm pretty sure of those billions of people, there's enough in there that are willing to pay $30 for a lease. Right? Willing to pay 99 cents for a download of your music. There's billions. Do you know how much billions is? People like, I only got 60 followers on my Twitter. You only got, put 60 people in this room right now, you wouldn't see me on camera. 60 people? Come on, man. Come on. That's all I wanted to say about that. So I wanted to touch really briefly on this subject of how do you know when your beat is done? I want to share what I actually wrote in a, and it's a bit of a meme that I wrote, and it's like an infographic, I should say. And start. Okay, all good. So in this infographic, for those of you that were listening right now and you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? Ray had to go ahead and restart the camera. It's all good. We do this and it's all real. You like that because it's real. I'm just playing. Okay, so the infographic, shout out to Ray, though. He's always putting these great videos together. The question was, how do you know when your music or your beat is complete? And I'm talking specifically to music producers. How do you know when your beat is complete? How do you know when it's time to press export? Well, here's a list that I compiled. The list that I compiled goes as follows. Number one, does it communicate a clear emotion? Two, do the sounds blend well together? That involves mixing, obviously. Three, is your beat intro too long? Four, is your beat too repetitive? Five, is the beat structure clear? Six, did you add too many sounds? Now, I'm not going to expand upon that because we're getting towards the end of the podcast, but I want an opportunity to hear, how do you know when it's time to export your beat? How do you know when your beat is complete? Don't give me none of that music is subjective. Don't give me none of that shit. I've already got enough of that on Twitter. Don't give me that. Give me an honest answer, because at some point you got to be up there in front of your laptop like, all right, I think this thing ready to go. And you press export. Whatever that moment is, you can describe it however you want to describe it. When do you know it's time for that? I'm very curious to know. I actually bought a lot of things today, but come to the YouTube channel. If you're listening, come to the YouTube channel, leave a comment. We would love to hear your input. It's a very positive community. And I love that about my YouTube community. Super positive. So as I end out here, a few things I want to mention is more like bulletin board type of things. One, make sure you get the Larry O and Curtis King special edition of my magazine called Monetize That. I have about 3 issues out right now. This is the 3rd issue. It's a special edition. Larry O and I put together 50 music producer tips that you need to know. The homie Larry O, if you don't know him, go to Instagram and check him out. Larry O with 2 H's. I did the house call kit with him. My man is like one of the most informative people that you're going to find on FL Studio. And so he uses these 1-minute clips to give out just vital information. He added 25 tips for FL Studio users that you can go there and look through and learn from some stuff maybe you do know or don't know. And then I added 25 health and wellness tips, of course, because I'm as Curtis King, you know how you got to do that. I added those 25 health and wellness tips, and we combined them together for 50 amazing tips. And you can get that at 50producertips.com. Go check it out. All we're asking for is your email, because we want to keep you up to date about something else that Larry O and I are working on, an advanced FL Studio course, a collaborative course. The first time I'm ever doing that with another producer, a collaborative course that is only going to be available for those on the email list. Don't look at it for no websites, only for those on the email list, because we want to make sure that we foster that email list, nurture it, and provide so much value that when it's that time, you already know what's up. So join us at 50producertips.com and go check that out. I want to say thank you to everybody that continues to leave comments on these videos. And I think I'm going to actually do a little something that's off the word I'm looking for, right? Yeah, that's it too. I like that word too, but it's a little bit off schedule. That's the thing I was looking for. I think I don't know nothing no more. All right, let me go ahead and mute this because I want to be able to shout out the people who are leaving comments just really quick. Avedon Smith, Kyrie Holmes, Steve in the Mix, Terrible Beats, Mr. Yeesh, Virus Beats, Mad Game. What's up, homie? Beats by J. Eel, Dark Matter Beats, 2X Tay, Jamel Cohard, DM Beats, my brother, Jam Jam, Toby Smith, Ayas, Rimsky, Rivers Drive Studio, Goofy the Man, Patrick McKinnis, Draw, Jerome Fraser, Justin Harvey, Mark Q, or Mark C, Ag the OG, 1986, Crispy Beats, Big Master, in External Records, Faber Soul, Big Drake, Gallo Z Baby, JUG, Alfred, Malik, Bagassi, CD, Danny, Dreadnought, Miss Ebony Love, Sokolo, I think, Global Hit, 306, Frosty, and even Illinois. Whew, I didn't anticipate how many names I was going to be, but I want to say thank you to every single one of you. I want to just stop calling you by general, my supporters. No, I want to make sure I address you by name and let you know how appreciative we all are for the support that you give this long form content. Like I always say, in this life, you will not be full of life until you decide to live life to its fullest. Once again, this is Curtis King of SlapExperts.com. Have a good one.